Listener Susan sent me this email the other day. Hey, John, I enjoy your interviews with Teddy Roosevelt. I'm really looking forward to his next visit in Chicago, and I am forwarding this piece by Heather Cox Richardson. She is an historian who posts almost every day on Substack about history and current events. Clay Jenkinson portrays Teddy Roosevelt when he comes to town. We go on stage and talk with the, what is it? What president was he? I know Jefferson was the third. What president was T.R., Clay?
He was the 26th, an accidental president, the 26th.
Accidental because he was only elevated to the presidency because of the assassination of the president.
Yes, he was nominated for the vice presidency just to get rid of him because people found him annoying with all of his interest in reform. So he served for only 5 days until the U.S. Senate adjourned for the summer. And then the next thing he knew, he was on top of Mount Marcy in New York, and he learned by courier that the president had been shot in Pittsburgh. And so he made his way quickly to Pittsburgh and was sworn in on a borrowed Bible and a borrowed suit to become the 26th president.
And that's when somebody said, now the damn cowboy is president or something like that?
Yes, one of his great detractors said, now look what you've done. That damned cowboy is the president of the United States.
You know, I am interviewing you as Clay Jenkinson, the historian. Frequently, I talk to you in the third person, if you will, as Thomas Jefferson or as Teddy Roosevelt. But when I put Teddy Roosevelt on the radio, it's so exhausting. I think it's hard on the listeners.
It's hard on me, too. You know, he had a squeaky voice. If ever there was a man of pure energy and exuberance, it was Theodore Roosevelt. One of his guests said, you know, you spend a couple of hours with him at the White House, you go back to your house and you wring his personality out of your clothes.
Well, you know, the reason that Heather wrote about Teddy Roosevelt is because she was writing on Valentine's Day or the day before or after, and it was Roosevelt who had the most tragic of Valentine's Day, maybe in American history. Can you just relate just the headlines of that story?
I certainly can. So he was married to a lovely young woman named Alice Hathaway Lee, and he was a reformist member of the New York State Assembly, and Alice gave birth prematurely to their first child, also named Alice, on the 12th of February, and he got all sorts of congratulations and so on. But then a day later, he received a second telegram saying that Alice had taken a terrible turn for the worse, and he must come home immediately. So he took the train down to Manhattan, arrived at their house, and his brother, Elliot, opened the door and said, there's a curse on this house. Alice is dying, and mother is dying too. So the two most important women in Roosevelt's world, his wife, who was 23, and his mother, Mittie, who was 49, died in the same house on the same day, Valentine's Day, 1884. Roosevelt had a small 2x3-inch pocket diary, put a huge X in it, and said, the light has gone out of my life.
It's funny, too, because women were so... His father was a seminal figure in his life, but women really did play a leading role in his thoughts and his daily affairs. And she wrote, Heather Cox Richardson did, about the passing of these two women at this within hours of each other in the same home. The diseases that killed his wife and mother were diseases of filth and crowding, the hallmarks of the growing Gilded Age American cities. Mittie contracted typhoid from either the food or water that had been contaminated by sewage, since New York City did not yet treat or manage either sewage or drinking water. And Alice's disease was probably caused by a strep infection, which incubated in the teeming city's tenements, where migrants whose wages barely kept food on the table crowded together. And she says that because of that, Roosevelt then decided to become more of an informer, at least in the long run. Is that true?
Mostly true. So, yes, I mean, this was a time of deplorable hygiene. They didn't really even understand it in that era. The Roosevelts would have been top tier in the American social structure, so they would have had more cleanliness, more access to medicine, more access to healthy air and everything else than almost anybody who lived in New York City at the time. But yes, those diseases are ones that are largely gone now because of standardized conditions and hygiene. He was already becoming interested in the plight of the poor. He had a famous event where he went into a cigar-making house where these poor immigrants who didn't speak English and didn't know the Constitution or the Bill of Rights, didn't know habeas corpus, didn't know anything, were rolling cigars, you know, 5, 10, 15 people in a single room without water, without windows that opened, with no elevator. And when he saw that, he said, we must protect the most helpless people who are in this country, irrespective of their legal status. We must protect them in basic ways so that they are not put into basically semi-slave labor by unscrupulous capitalists. So he was already beginning to be a believer in the square deal, even before the death of his mother and his wife, which was, of course, a devastating moment in his life.
There is a story in the Times, Teddy Roosevelt's family urges GOP to protect public lands. It's about the boundary waters of Minnesota and how the current administration, with Republican support, mind you, is going to allow for the mining up there. And so here's Teddy Roosevelt's great-grandson urging them to protect the land. That's been kind of a hallmark of the Roosevelt family, right?
Absolutely. I'm so pleased to see that. That's T.R. the Fourth. He's an investment banker in New York City, but there are a number of Roosevelts who are active these days, including for the new presidential library that's going up in western North Dakota, and that will open up on the 4th of July this next summer, 2026. The family understands that if there's a huge legacy for Theodore Roosevelt, but central to that is his conservation legacy. You know, as you know well, Johnny set aside 230 million acres of the public lands as National Park, National Monument, National Forest, National Wildlife Refuge, National Game Preserve, National Bird Sanctuary, and so on. And so the idea that today we're beginning to take apart the public lands, and I'm sorry to say, my former governor, Doug Burgum of North Dakota, is right in there doing this, that we're trying to privatize the public lands, to allow mining in the public lands, to allow commercial enterprise in national parks and so on. This sort of thing is anathema to the Roosevelt legacy, and I'm so glad that the family is standing up. I'm not sure what effect this will have, because as I'm sure you know, the people in power today don't listen much to anybody except themselves.
Well, the rollback of EPA standards is something that is kind of bizarre, if not frightening to me, and also maybe not going to come to the effect that we fear. I'm hopeful that the courts or calmer heads will prevail to preserve the ecology, the environment, our health and welfare as a result. That's a conversation maybe for another day. You are going to be in the new Ken Burns documentary, Clay?
Yes. Henry David Thoreau coming out at the end of March. I was just interviewing the directors of it in Ken Burns' shop last week. They said, quote, "You're all over it." So I was interviewed in my home about 2 years ago, and of course you never know whether you're in or out and what you've said, and you live in agony that you said stupid things. And you beg for another interview. You know, you've heard me talk about this before, but we had a great conversation. I'm in love with Thoreau. I'm actually doing a series of video modules on my website, ltamerica.org, about Thoreau. I'm going to do a retreat west of Missoula in January about Thoreau. People should consider coming. Again, they go to ltamerica.org. But Thoreau is, I believe, America's greatest environmentalist. Walden, I think, is America's greatest book. And so I'm very honored and thrilled that I'm in this this documentary, and I can't wait to see it because, as you know, once you're interviewed, you know nothing until it comes out.
Mm. So were you the interviewer or the interviewee about Thoreau?
I was what was called a talking head, or what's derisively called the talent. So I'm one of the probably 10 talking heads in the film. They always say it'd be so much easier to make these films if we didn't have to deal with these scholars.
Well, Thoreau's not available, so what are you going to do? All right, I've got to let you go, but what's a quote that I should take from Thoreau? Why don't you give us something to live by today?
I'll give you two quickly. So one doesn't work for you because you're rather dapper. Beware of all enterprises that require new clothes. Beware of all enterprises that require new clothes. But here's a better one. As long as possible, remain free and uncommitted.
Do that again.
as long as possible, remain free and uncommitted. My advice to all young people, go to Europe, wander the world, do Peace Corps. Don't settle into your economic life too soon. As long as possible, remain free and uncommitted.
Beware of all enterprises that require new clothes.
Or new glasses, in your case.
Stop it. All right, we will see Teddy Roosevelt on stage in the 1st of November, or the last day in October. So bring TR with you, and we'll talk again, Clay Jenkinson.
I promise not to be exhausting.
Good luck to us on that. LTAmerica.org. LTAmerica.org. It's